Podcast. I'm Chad Young, joined as always by Pete Ball. And Pete, this is going to be maybe the most contentious episode of Keeper Cut ever, because we are recording while the Guardians and Red Sox are taking the field in a showdown of teams that are still desperately clinging to wild card hopes.
Yeah, I mean, we're technically in fifth place. This is the first time this late in the year that a team has been in last place in the East other than the Orioles since, I think it was like 2017 or something like that.
When was the last time the Red Sox were in last?
Actually, kind of, it had to have been somewhat recently, because that's how we got Marcelo Meyer, unless we were so bad the Orioles were worse. But I thought we finished in last place the season that we got Marcelo Meyer, because we had the fourth overall pick. So,
yeah, okay. I guess it couldn't have been that long ago. Well,
it's extremes here. We're either like...
It is just crazy that in that division, you're in fifth place, but legitimately still in the wild card picture. Like 49-49 at 500. If we go to the wild card, the Red Sox are 3.5 games out. That's far from insurmountable. So...
But it's a momentum thing, right? I mean, like yes, you just looked at it now and saw the record, you'd say like, no, they're still in the thick of it. But man, that the bottom of the order is just so, so bad. And that's hardly the issue, by the way. I mean, it's the whole team. The bullpen's a disaster. They can't find anybody to start. Everybody's hurt. It's bad.
Yeah, no, I understand that. It's just fascinating that I don't think the White Sox, who are also both Sox are exactly 500 at 49-49. I don't think the White Sox are looking to sell, considering themselves out of it. I think they think like they can get things going again. I think there's talk about like, should Baltimore be buying? And I'm not sure I think Baltimore should be buying, but that's mostly because I think that their second half could get real ugly. And because I think they've got a really good core in place, and if I'm them, I'm waiting to add to that next year. And then you got Cleveland just ahead of Baltimore, half game up on Baltimore, who also like lots of conversation. Cleveland fans, I will tell you, desperately want the team to buy. Now, the more analytically minded Cleveland fans would like to see them be opportunistic. And so, you know, Cleveland's done this pretty well in the past, where like if the right offer comes along for, let's say, Shane Bieber, you trade Shane Bieber and you take that right offer if it's there. At the same time, if the right offer exists to acquire, you know, Luis Castillo or Pablo Lopez or Frankie Montas or someone like that, go do that too. Like, those are also fine things to do. So it'll be interesting to see what any of those teams do. But it is fascinating that like you have four teams. So right now in the AL, you've got your three division leaders, you've got your three wildcard leaders, and then you have four teams that are between 2.5 and 3.5 out. And I just feel like narratives around all four of them are so different. Like, they're all right there. They have basically the same record, but like Boston fans seem done. There's talk about whether or not they should trade Xander Bogaerts, who we're going to talk about later in this episode. The White Sox, like most of what I hear from White Sox fans is like, we've been totally snake bitten this year and things can only get better. And so we're still right in the thick of things. I think most Cleveland fans feel like we're just ahead of schedule, right? You had a bunch of kids coming up and people are performing. And so here they are all of a sudden sort of in the midst of it. And then you're Baltimore. Everyone's just like, Baltimore? Really? So you have these four really different stories for teams that have very similar records. It maybe is worth noting that Cleveland is the only one of those teams with a positive run differential. Maybe that's worth noting. But even that, I mean, it's not like their run differentials, like their expected win-loss records based on run differential aren't that far apart. Cleveland's the best of them at 49-47. Chicago the worst at 47-51. Like, it's just not that wide a range.
So, I also wonder how much the 4-touchdown game from the Blue Jays is affecting the Red Sox run differential.
They would be
obviously by 24 or 23 runs, whatever it was.
Yeah, they would be positive if they had not played that game. Like, what was the final score of that one?
Same with me. The final score was 28-5. We got a safety at the end of the third quarter to bring us within 23.
28-5. So you lost by 23, and your run differential right now is negative 15. So all you had to do was keep it within 8 or something instead of 23. That's a pretty significant difference, though. So it's not like you're that close.
And that's why, like,
I feel better or not.
It doesn't. I guess, like, smaller basis. This is why I don't like run differential as much. Like, I do think it's generally a good stat, but man, every Blue Jays fan was jumping up and down about the team's run differential last year and how they, if they made the playoffs, they would have won the World Series. And it's like, it's just one stat. Like, and look at them now. Like, they're great and they're getting better, actually, but they're not the Yankees. And I don't know. Run differential, I think, is fine if you take it for what it is and you don't project it on, you know, the rest of the season.
Yeah, I wonder if there's some interesting data in, like, run differential capped at 8 per game or something like that. Something where, like, if you're up 8, there's some rule about how close the game has to be to allow or how much of a blowout it has to be before a position player can pitch. It's like 7 or something like that. If you're within 7, you can't use a position player. And I wonder if you just use that as a cutoff and said, like, run differential, but if you're winning by 8 plus, then we cap you at 7 and call it 7. And where I think run differential is useful is, like, the ability to score 20 runs is still an ability to score 20 runs. I think where it falls apart is, you know, you're up 9-0. And so the other team starts using position players. They use, like, non-major league caliber pitchers who, you know, they take the guy in the end of their bullpen who usually would be used for, like, one inning of mop-up duty and have them throw 3 innings of mop-up duty, and they're just getting torched, but they stay out there because, you know, the guy's getting burned and heading down to AAA tomorrow anyway, so what's the difference? And it's like, then those runs sort of don't matter. They aren't actually speaking to an ability to win games. So I hear you. But regardless of that, it's an interesting topic to look at those standings because it is trade deadline time. We're recording this on Wednesday the 27th. This will post on Monday, which is the 1st. Monday is the 1st. And the deadline is the 2nd, right? So it's coming up. It's coming up fast. There's a lot of interesting names out there. And so what we wanted to do is take a look at trade deadline deals we'd like to see happen because of the fantasy implications, right? So this isn't as much as either one of us would like to say Juan Soto to our favorite teams, that's not the point of this. Point of this is to look at trades that could theoretically happen that would have interesting positive or negative fantasy implications. I guess because they're trades we want to see, there's got to be some sort of positive fantasy implication, unless it's just like, I want to see this guy's value tanked. But I don't think that's what we're trying to do here. So we're going to go through. We got 2 deals each that we sort of put together. Again, the goal here is to be at least somewhat realistic. So that's not to say that any of these deals are deals we definitely think are going to happen or should happen or anything like that. But they're deals that make sense. They're players that could be traded, moving to teams that could trade for them, that we think would have positive fantasy implications if they happened. And to kick things off, Pete, I know you want to talk about Luis Castillo. What do you want to see with him?
Yeah, so the deal I came up with Castillo, well, first of all, Luis Castillo, like, he it's weird because he's a pitcher who we think, like, oh, we got to get him out of Great American Ballpark. And, like, yeah, that's true of every pitcher that pitches there, unless you're a Reds fan, right? Like, we got to get them out of there. But the ballpark's not that much of a big deal for Castillo. I'd argue over the last 2 years, the bigger problem for him regarding his team is the defense. And it was much worse last year with Eugenio Suarez manning shortstop. And Castillo generates a lot of ground balls. It looks kind of low for him this year. If I had to guess, his ground ball rate is right around 50%, which is so great. It's well above league average, but not as much as you'd maybe expect from these really heavy ground ball guys. But anyway, 50% is 50%. It's probably who he is anyway. Ground ball pitcher. Most of his balls are going to be in the ground. And I want to see him go to the Cardinals. I found the Cardinals to be an interesting fit. Like, I noticed that you also have one of your guys going to a division rival. And I think that's kind of something that maybe we've even talked about this in the past. It's not a big deal. Like, if you're the Reds, you're so far from contending. Who cares if you give a 30-year-old pitcher to another team in the division? Like, you're looking ahead. If they're giving you the best package, you do it. I think maybe a Nolan Gorman or Matthew Liberatore package could get the deal done. I mean, it's obviously going to take a lot more, just be given how few starting pitchers are out there on the market. And Chad, you did ask beforehand, like, should we even come up with packages or just like locations for where we want these guys to land? And just for the sake of talk, I wanted to come up with packages, but like nobody ever gets these right, right? The guy that we think is going to go for a ton of prospects ends up going for a few. The guy we don't think they're going to get anybody for, they end up getting something for. Trades are so hard to predict in MLB. But Nolan Gorman or Matthew Liberatore, package for Luis Castillo, get him to the Cardinals. The Cardinals have a great defense, not just because of all the gold gloves they won last year, but if you look at their outs against average and you look at it for just the infield, I'm only looking at the infield because that's obviously what would matter most for Luis Castillo. Not a lot of balls go in the air against him. Their gap, so they're in first, 21. They have a score of 21 outs against average. Second place is the Padres at 16. The gap between first and second is equal, or actually bigger than the gap between second and sixth. The Cardinals have a great defense. Everybody knows that. Arenado over there at third base has been a vacuum, but that's clearly something that that organization values. And last point on Castillo, like the defensive upgrade, the ballpark upgrade, he only has 3 wins this year, which like, that's the Reds. You don't expect them to get a lot of wins, but like 3 for a guy who routinely goes deep into outings and to have such a low whip in ERA, and he's only got 3 wins. Since the start of June, Castillo's pitched at least 6 innings pitched in every start except for 1. He's pitched at least 7 innings pitched in every July start. So to only have 3 wins just feels wrong. I think if he went to the Cardinals, he could be a serious contributor in that category. So Castillo, that would be my pick, Castillo to the Cardinals.
It's an interesting one. I like that idea for Castillo. I think the return gets interesting from a fantasy perspective, because first of all, like Gorman getting into the Great American Ballpark would be great, but I actually think Gorman is too much for Castillo. Like, I don't think that's where the package starts. I think Liberatore could be, but that'd be a disaster for his fantasy value. But I do wonder about someone like Alec Burleson, who I think would be an interesting fit. They could look at someone like a Juan Yepes, a Lars Nootbaar, who seems a little bit blocked there. There are some guys that I just think would be interesting pieces for them to move. Even like a guy like Mason Winn is an interesting name. They've got a bunch of names that could fit. I personally think Gorman, if we're looking at their young major or minor league players, like Gorman and Walker are two guys that I'd be like, no. Like, that's just too much for us to give up for Castillo. Castillo would help them a lot. And I think you're absolutely right. They're getting him in front of an improved defense. And yes, you're saying Great American Ballpark hasn't hurt him that much. He's pitched pretty well at home, but like, that's still a big ballpark upgrade too, right? So they don't want to ignore that. Now, looking at sort of good defensive teams where Castillo might be a fit, I mean, if they didn't want to trade him in division, like Baltimore has had a pretty good defense, I believe, this year, and in theory could be in the market for a starting pitcher. I don't know if I want to make that trade, but maybe the Blue Jays could be. I don't know if the Blue Jays are in the market for a starter. It feels like they should be. They're bringing back Yusei Kikuchi this week, right? So like, seems like a starting pitcher wouldn't be the worst idea.
And and Stripling's been well. They just need Berrios to be not terrible, and then I think they're fine at starting pitcher.
Yeah, that could be true. Maybe they're not a great fit then. So, but there are some teams that have been solid defensively that would be a good fit. And I do think you're right to call out. It's an interesting thing. I started to look at other teams that are sort of near the bottom. But you've been looking at outs above average. Are there other teams at the bottom that have pitchers you would love to see them get rid of?
I'd have to pull it up in front of me, so just give me a minute. But I'm gonna guess yes.
I'm sure there are. I mean, I don't know why there wouldn't be. So
actually, I mean, one of them we're gonna talk about because he's on the same team, and there was someone who tweeted at us and responded to that. So I won't even bring him up. We don't need to dive into that just yet. But looking at those bottom teams, it's unsurprising. There's no one really on the Nationals that I would expect them to move, like Josiah Gray. Just gives up a lot of home runs, so like there's not fielding's not going to do anything about that, and they're not going to trade him away because they just got him as part of the main package for Scherzer and Trey. The Giants defense overall, I'm kind of surprised to see it rank so poorly, 29th in baseball. And Carlos Rodon, if the Giants decide to sell, like, he's an obvious candidate to sell. He's going to opt out because he's having a terrific year, and they could perhaps get a haul for him from one of those contenders. So I guess Carlos Rodon would get my vote, and he's another ground ball guy.
Alex Cobb, another guy who's on that team who theoretically could get moved if they decide to sell. So that's an interesting one. I do wonder if the Giants are going to sell, but yeah, that's another team to look at. That guys leaving the Giants, any pitchers who the Cubs trade, they've been pretty bad defensively. That's sort of it. I don't know if there's a lot of other pitchers down at the bottom of that fielding standings that I think are likely to get moved, like you said, but those are guys that have, you know, guys leave those teams. They leave the Reds, they leave the Giants, they leave the Cubs. Almost anywhere they go, their defense is going to get better behind them.
Yeah.
I know there's been a lot of talk about Tarek Skubal potentially getting traded and that his defense has been really bad behind him, but the Tigers are actually 9th in outs above average.
So, their infield's even better.
Is it?
Their infield is 6th, and Skubal is another 50% ground ball guy, and it's just great to pitch in Comerica anyway. Skubal, maybe one of those rare downgrades. Just quick correction, I said Carlos Rodon, ground ball pitcher. He's obviously not, but I'd still like to see him get out of San Francisco.
Fair enough. Let's jump to another pitcher. This guy, he is not in a park like Great American Ballpark at all. He is not playing in front of a particularly bad defense. It's not a particularly good defense, but it's a defensive defense. They do fine. but Frankie Montas, very likely to get traded. And I did, as you noted, suggest that Montas may get traded within the division, which, you know, as we talked about before, teams seem loath to do that, but I don't really understand why. Go get the best package. Frankie Montas, to me, makes a ton of sense for Seattle. They could use another arm. They've got the young talent to get a deal done. They could talk about a guy like Matt Brash, Taylor Trammell. They could also, like, I don't know what the Mariners' plans are with Jared Kelnick, but like, Kelnick for Montas is a real interesting straight up deal. So there are some options there for Seattle to get a deal done. The key for me with Montas with any trade is he is in such a good park right now that I'm very worried that he's going to get traded somewhere where his value is going to tank, right? Like, I don't want to see him end up in like an extreme hitter's park where he's facing tougher competition or something like that, right? Like, it could get ugly. Seattle is a good fit from a fantasy perspective. I already talked about why they make sense from sort of a baseball perspective, but from a fantasy perspective, T-Mobile Park is not, it's not Oakland. Like, it's not the pitcher's heaven that you get by the Bay, but it's not a bad park for pitching. It certainly plays more to pitchers than hitters. They also, the Mariners, have a bottom five rest of season schedule based on, now it's based on win percentage, so it's not exactly a measure of offense, but looking within their division, they have 11 left with the Angels. The Angels, who might be trading Shohei Ohtani and who may or may not have Mike Trout again this year, given the news we got today. So that's a pretty bad team, especially without those two. They have nine more.
Terrible.
Yeah, they have nine more against Oakland. So Montas would get to face his old team at least a couple times, and they're terrible.
Sweet
revenge.
They have
seven more against Texas, and they only have four left against Houston. So, you know, half the remaining schedule is within the division, and it's almost exclusively with teams that pitchers should be thrilled to face. That's a good thing to know in general. Like, if you're debating if you're going to do something with, you know, a guy like George Kirby, like, if you're, you know, in a fantasy league, like, let's say that you were in an auto new head-to-head points league and you were debating whether or not you were going to trade George Kirby to your co-host of a podcast, you might want to consider the fact that George Kirby should have a real soft schedule for the next, you know, couple months. So,
well, I was listening to Fantasy Baseball Today, and they were talking about young pitchers, and they actually said that Kirby looks like one of the most likely to get shut down early. And I'm not saying that just so you'll accept the deal, but I think he's basically already hit like his innings or matched or exceeded his innings from last year. And you know, obviously with young guys now because of the 2020 season, their innings are even lower than they normally would be because they did not pitch that season in professional ball. So he might be a guy that gets shut down a little bit early.
He might, but I also, the Mariners, if they continue to hang around and have a, heard that demonic laughter, that was my daughter. If they continue to hang around and have a real shot at the postseason, I don't think, man, I don't know. I don't know that, like, maybe if they trade him, someone else would shut him down. But as it stands right now, they are one up on Tampa for the second wild card spot and 3.5 up on Cleveland for holding on to that third wild card spot. And they don't have somebody to replace him. But Montas makes a ton of sense for Seattle. They have a really easy schedule the rest of the way. As an added bonus here, if the Mariners include close to ready players, a guy like a Matt Brash, a guy like a Taylor Trammell, a guy like Kelnick, it may give those guys a shot to play that they're not getting right now. And so that's the other thing I look at with some of these trades, is like, is there an opportunity to sort of unblock someone and give them a chance? And there could be in this case. So that's what I like about this from a fantasy perspective, is you get the possibility of Montas landing somewhere that isn't a disaster, because there's a chance he ends up somewhere that is. The possibility of guys going back to Oakland who suddenly get a shot to play every day. So I like that. I think it's sort of interesting. What do you think about that?
No, I really like it. I mean, the first reason is, and it's something that I hate to talk about because it's such a lame category, but we continue to use it in at least 5x5 as wins. And it's a guy who's, you know, he has 19 games started with a 3.18 ERA and a 1.13 whip. He has 4 wins. And that is because Oakland is the best team to stream against, because they could not hit their way out of a paper bag. And if he goes to Seattle, not only is it an easier schedule, like you said, but it's just a much better team. So I think that's going to be the biggest difference makers for in categories leagues for these pitchers that get moved, Castillo and Montas, is that, like, obviously sellers are usually bad teams, but these two guys have a combined 7 wins, 8 wins. That's ridiculous. So they're going to go from players who have not contributed in that category at all to perhaps major contributors in that category, because what do we look for in wins? Well, it's guys who go deep into outings, which both of these dudes do, and play for good teams, and they do. So I think that could be a noticeable, if you're low in the win category in your leagues and you have a Montas or you have a Castillo, I wouldn't start doing risky streams. I'd wait a week, see who they're playing for, and all of a sudden you might see those win totals start to go up.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So let's jump to the next guy on our list, and this is probably who you were most, I don't know if excited is the right word. You wanted to talk about this guy. I can't imagine it'll make you real happy to discuss the possibility of him leaving his current team. But take a deep breath, control your emotions, and let's talk a little bit about Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah, so, like, honestly, I'm very realistic about the situation the Red Sox are in. And quite frankly, the way he's played this year, I'm glad they didn't give him some crazy max contract. I'm talking NBA, some crazy huge contract. I love Bogaerts. I always will. He's won 2 World Series with us. He's going to go into the Red Sox Hall of Fame. He's going to have his number retired, all that stuff. He's great.
Package him to Brooklyn.
There's some
to get
concerning signs.
Kevin Durant.
I feel better about that than giving up Jaylen Brown. that'd be great, honestly.
The question is, look, to Brooklyn, is that the Yankees or is it like the Dodgers because they used to be in Brooklyn? Like, who gets him? But you'll have to figure that out later.
or does he just have to play for the Nets?
He seems like he could be a good basketball player. He's like athletic. He seems like he's kind of tall, right?
I would bet that Xander Bogaerts is better at basketball than Kevin Durant is at playing shortstop.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kevin Durant's 6'11 frame is going to...
No, I mean, and Xander, I mean, he's 6'2", 218. You're telling me he can't be a point guard?
Yeah. He's athletic enough.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And, like, he could probably learn to shoot a basketball. I don't think Durant can hit a curve.
No. I don't think Durant can hit a fastball.
No, definitely not.
But anyway, there's concerning signs. He has his worst average exit velocity since 2017. His barrel percentage is pathetic. It's like 6.6% or something. I just had it up in front of me. It's gone. It's in the sixes. It's his worst K rate of his career, but I hesitate to bring that up because his K rate is still good compared to the MLB, but it's not for him. It's up over 20%, which it hasn't been for a while. his lowest max EV since 2018. It's not much of an outlier, though. They're pretty much all pretty close together. But for what it's worth, it is his lowest max EV. So there are signs to me that, like, it's probably this is your last chance to sell on Bogaerts because he's obviously gone. I don't think a lot of Red Sox fans have come to grips with that. But, like, they just signed Trevor Story to this massive contract, and they've basically given this guy the door. Now, the Red Sox, if you think they should sell or not, I understand, you know, people kind of debating that. I think they should. Like, everything that could have gone wrong in the last 2 weeks has gone wrong. Look at the IL. There's like $180 million worth of players on the IL right now for the Red Sox. Now, all that aside, where should he go? I think it's actually kind of obvious. I think he should go to the Astros. Now, the fit is not perfect because Jeremy Peña's there, and he's played well. He's arguably been better than, I don't even know if it's arguably even better than Bogaerts this year. So it's kind of a weird sell. But to bring in a player like Bogaerts with that pedigree, I mean, that's a monster splash of a move. And I guess my thinking is maybe another move would follow. And these things kind of tend to figure themselves out when you roster two players like that, right? Like it'll figure itself out. I would like to see the Red Sox get back a player like Christian Javier. We don't need to go down this road. That's a lot to pay for a rental, but it is Xander Bogaerts. And the Astros already have a six-man rotation right now with Lance McCullers coming back. So, like, Jake Odorizzi, if you count him. So, Javier, well, like...
The Astros have said they're open to trading controllable starting pitching. So, there may be pitchers on the move. I don't know that I can see them... Like, what do you do with Bogaerts?
That's the problem.
Him to third base. You can't play him at shortstop. Like, I mean, you can, right? You can make a strong case that you would rather have Xander Bogaerts as your shortstop than Jeremy Peña the rest of the year. But I don't think it's obvious, and I don't think it's a clear enough or a large enough improvement that I want to give up anything meaningful for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm twisting myself into a pretzel to figure out how to do it. But I do think Jeremy Peña himself could bring something back in the trade market, and I guess that's where my thinking was at, that there's going to be more moves on the way. And this, I mean, if you're Houston, it's about maximizing this Justin Verlander, Jose Altuve window, right? I mean, like, these guys are not going to perform like superstars for the rest of they're not Tom Brady. They're not going to continue to do it until they're 50 years old. So maximizing that window and you know, who knows how long Yordan Alvarez's knees are going to keep up and all that stuff. Like, they have a great team. Win now. And if you give up a piece like Javier to bring in a player like Bogaerts and then move Peña in a separate deal to open things up, I think that could be an option for them because they have other holes, right? Like, corner outfield has been a bit of an issue. Michael Brantley's been out. And this has been a terrible year for Yuli Gurriel, who's got a WRC plus of 91. He has not been himself. So there's upgrading to be done if you are the Houston Astros. And Javier is a perfect fit for the Red Sox. I mean, their pitching's a disaster. They need something. And if you could bring in a player like that, then you should. Final point on Bogaerts, his expected home runs in Houston would be 13 this year, just as most of any park. His power's been pathetic. So when I saw 13, I was like, whoa, but it's the Crawford boxes. And so Bogaerts would be trading those Fenway doubles for homers in Houston. And I think that would obviously be a sizable fantasy upgrade the rest of the season for Bogaerts. Wouldn't expect him to sign an extension with them. I think he has a new home next year. So for keeper leagues, it'd be a very short-term boost. But for the second half, if Houston came out of nowhere and got Xander Bogaerts, I think it'd be huge.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who, because I'll be honest, like, I don't know that I buy it. I don't think they're trading for Bogaerts and then spinning off Peña. I think they're...
This is just like my, if I'm a Bogaerts roster, this is like my dream scenario.
Yeah.
Not likely. I'm not trying to make a prediction here.
Right. I'm trying to think if there's like what are the more realistic, because they are, I mean, he is a guy they should shop if they're selling for sure. Like, you know, Seattle, if he'd play second base, like, they're rolling Adam Frazier out at second base and he's a perfectly acceptable major league player. But like, if you could push Frazier to the bench and into utility role, he's played some outfield for them. Like, he would make a ton of sense.
St. Louis has
Bogaerts would lengthen that lineup.
Oh, for
St. Louis.
They've been rumored pretty much all year. And I think Gorman's been so bad that I think he just gets bumped out and Tommy Edman moves to second base.
Yeah, I think that could make sense. I think, boy, does San Diego want to upgrade shortstop if Tatis isn't going to be a shortstop? Like, that's another interesting one. I don't know who else. I can't think of where else he goes.
Well, most good teams just have shortstops.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to think of like, where could he play? Like, where would he be an upgrade at a different position? And like, maybe, I don't know, like the Twins have sort of a rotating cast of characters around some of their infield positions, but like Jose Miranda and Luis Arraez have been good. They just got Sano back, who would play some first.
Right.
So like, could you put him at third base next to Correa? Sure, you could. But I don't know. Again, I don't know that they're going to do that. It's an interesting one. It's not like middle infield isn't really a need for Cleveland, and they're not likely to make that kind of a short-term move. Maybe, I guess, Baltimore. It seems like a crazy trade to happen, but yeah, I don't know. There's some... It's hard to figure out where... Yeah, I just don't know where I would send him. Who are the Mets playing at second base these days? Is it still McNeil?
It's got to be, right? Because that outfield's...
So, yeah, I mean, you could move McNeil to the outfield, I guess. But
then you're benching Canna. Yeah,
it doesn't really make sense. McNeil has not been good recently. And so maybe they just, I don't know, maybe they just don't believe he's going to keep being good. I don't know. He could make some sense in Philly.
So I was just going to say.
And boy, would that be a nice landing spot for him in terms of a park that he could mash in.
And a lineup.
My goodness, yeah. Boy, you put him there and then just get rid of Didi Gregorius.
Yes.
That's all it is, just DFA Didi Gregorius. And I wonder, though, the Phillies, like, what's the trade piece that the Phillies have? Because I don't feel like they've got a bunch of... Let's look at their system real quick. I mean, Mick Abel seems like too much to give up. I don't know. Like, would they trade Bryson Stott? Maybe. Logan Ohapi seems maybe too much, but could be a fit. I don't know.
I think there's some interesting names there. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Bogarts is such a weird player to value too, because it's already hard to do these hypothetical trades. It just upsets everybody. The fans of both sides say they're not getting enough in return. But like, as hard as I was on Bogarts with those numbers and the fact he is a rental, the dude has a 136 WRC plus this year. Like, there's no question that Xander Bogarts is a bona fide stud in MLB. So I will be disappointed if they move him and don't get that much in return for whatever reason that might be. And if you look at his expected batting average and think that he's due for regression and that his batting average is too high, he's outperformed his expected batting average all the time. So that's not a concern for me with Bogarts. I hope they move him, and I hope they get something good.
Makes sense. Let's take a quick break. During that break, I'm going to debate whether or not to tell Pete that the Guardians scored 3 in the top of the second to take the lead, or if I should leave him happy for a little bit longer. So we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, welcome back. It turns out Pete could hear me speculating on whether or not I should tell him that the Guardians took the lead, so now he knows. The Astros threw the ball around, the Red Sox threw the ball around. It was a sort of ugly inning, so sorry about that.
Oh, shocker.
Let's keep going. Let's keep going on our trades we'd like to see happen, and I just can't get enough of the Athletics. I already talked about Frankie Montas. I'm going to talk about his battery mate now. And I would like to see Sean Murphy get traded to the Mets. So The biggest issue with this from a realism standpoint might be that the Mets believe enough in Francisco Alvarez that they don't want to trade for a catcher who's got control. My personal take on this is that with the DH and with catchers needing rest and not always aging well, like catchers don't always age well. They need days off and they also often are slow to develop. And between all those things, I don't see it as a problem if I'm the Mets to have both Sean Murphy and Francisco Alvarez. If they are both producing the way I think they can and they're both healthy, then they take turns DHing, then they can both play, let's say, 60% of the time, which is all you expect from your catcher anyways. Like if, you know, if they each catch two games out of every five and each DH a game out of every five, and then one of them gets the extra game at catcher, like that's fine. And that's a totally reasonable use of your DH, and they're both good enough to do that. And I think the Mets with like Brett Beatty could be the big piece to go back because they have Mark Vientos coming too. Theoretically, Alvarez could make sense, but I don't know if the Mets want to trade him. And the A's have already got multiple catcher prospects. I'm not sure that's a great fit, but that could be figured out. I think one of the third basemen and maybe an outfielder or a pitcher could be a good way to start a deal. Murphy, meanwhile, Murphy is an underrated offensive catcher. And I think a lot of that comes down to his home road splits. So the last two seasons, his home WRC plus is 88 and 104. Combined, it's a 98. So 98 WRC plus over the last few years. Now keep in mind, WRC plus is park adjusted, right? So like that 98 is after accounting for the fact that he's at Oakland. His road over the last 2 years is 108 and 124 with a 123 between the 2 years. So that is in each individual season, he is, or 123 for his career, not between the 2 years, sorry. He has 20 points of WRC plus better on the road each of the last 2 years and 25 points better for his career. When you look at WOBA for his career, he's a 300 WOBA at home and a 348 on the road. He just seems to get really badly hurt by Oakland, even more than you would expect based on the park effects. And like the difference between being a 300, the difference between him being split between Oakland and his road stats, so you know, 300 at home, 348 on the road, and being just outside of Oakland is the difference between him being in a 12 team league, an acceptable starting catcher, a decent starting catcher in a 15 team league, to moving up to like a top five catcher the rest of the way if he's not in Oakland. So I really like this. I love the idea. And I talked again about the return and, you know, who do you unblock? And so one of the things I like about this is I think the Mets are going to have a question on their hands between Beatty and Vientos. So if you include one of them, either one of them could be performing for Oakland pretty soon without one of them blocking the other in New York. So I really like that idea. And honestly, like, I would be in any of my leagues going out and buying Sean Murphy right now. Because if you can get him now, I think in a week, his value is going to go up after he gets traded. And I think in a month, after people see how good he is after he gets traded, he's going to be really hard to acquire, especially in keeper leagues. So I would go get him. I think the Mets should go get him. There's probably other teams that he fits to. The Guardians could really use an upgrade at catcher this year. And they're in a similar boat where I think Bo Naylor is a bit of an underrated prospect and he should be ready next year. And so maybe they don't want a controllable catcher. But again, I think that's a problem you can live with. And so Sean Murphy, somebody go get him and go get him in your fantasy leagues.
Yeah, I like the fits for the Mets. I get you have Francisco Alvarez coming, but if you're the Mets, you're trying to win a World Series this year. And if the price tag on Wilson Contreras is too high, or if he gets traded elsewhere and they miss out, like, figure it out when Alvarez is ready. Like, figure out this beautiful problem you have. Like you said, maybe it's just sharing catching duties and DH duties. They're both good enough to do so. So that part doesn't bother me at all. And I mean, think back to, like, I don't think we should ever underestimate the park difference. Like, you brought up his WRC plus in the row versus WRC plus at home. And I don't think that should get ignored in any context ever. And I think the best example of that was Willy Adames last year. And I think this could be the type of such a dramatic shift similar to Adames, where Murphy is this year's Willy Adames, and maybe even more valuable, because even though he's not going to get the steals, it's at a position, like you said, where he goes from this middle of the road, you know, fringe catcher to like top five at the position. I'd love Murphy in New York, or just in general, Murphy outside of Oakland. I actually think the Red Sox could be a good fit. Vasquez,
yeah, makes sense.
Is in a walk year. They don't have a lot of catching prospects coming up the pipeline. It doesn't look like Connor Wong, who they got in the Mookie Betts deal, is going to be the long-term answer. I think Murphy would be a great fit in Fenway. It'd be like they just signed Trevor Story. Like, they're not in this giant rebuild, so they're looking to get back major league players. I think he'd be a good fit, but kind of besides the point. Yeah, get Murphy out of Oakland.
Yeah, I like that. I like Boston as an interesting one. I mean, they'd have to figure out what to do with Vasquez, because I don't think you want to bring Murphy in and then have them split time this year. But I think the bigger issue for Boston is going to be whatever value you place on Murphy for 2023 and 2024. Because I think he still has 2 years of control after this one, if I'm correct. I should double check that. But whatever value you place on him for those years, you don't necessarily place that value on him for this year. And someone else will, right? Like, the Mets can value him for two full seasons plus this playoff run. If Boston is selling, that doesn't really hold for them. So let's see. Yeah, he still has, well, he's only got 2 years of service time, does Murphy? So he's just going to hit
arbitration arb the next for the 3 years.
First year next year. So he has 23, 24, and 25. Is that right? Man, somebody should pay a lot for him. That's my takeaway.
he's going to get screwed for his first contract, because he's going to be a catcher at 31 years old trying to find a contract. So he needs to have a big 3 years. Nobody's hoping to get out of Oakland more than he is this year.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting one, because if you're a team looking for a catcher, he's kind of ideal, because you can bring him in. You can have him for his prime. You don't even have to worry about or think about extending him, because you can just let him walk in 3 years. And that's sort of a nice fit. But that's sort of besides the point for now. The point is, get him out of Oakland, give him a chance to actually hit somewhere that he is going to be successful. Let's talk a little bit about Juan Soto. And it is unclear to me. I go back and forth by the hour of whether it's like Soto's definitely getting moved, or I'm like, they're going to wait. They're not going to, you know, and I can't decide if they still think they can extend him, and so therefore are going to, you know, give it the offseason to take another shot at it, or if that relationship is so burned that he's gone. And if he's gone, they should trade him now, because his value, like, I think one of the things people don't always think about when they think about trade value for players is that we tend to think about trade value as like how many wins are you going to get from this player over the life of their contract? But there's a step function in there, because getting him for the playoffs this year, like picking him up right now when you're going to get 2 months of this season and then all of the next two seasons, is worth more than an extra 2 months of time compared to getting him in the offseason, because you get him for an extra playoffs. And so I think there's a pretty significant decrease in his value after the deadline. And yeah, so I guess he's going to get moved. But for now, let's forget speculating on whether or not he gets moved and focus on where would you like to see him go?
Yeah, I mean, for fantasy purposes, I think the obvious answer is the Yankees, right? And rumor is that they have got the best offer on the table. We'll see if that's actually true or not, but that's coming from Jeff Passan, so maybe it is.
So that Passan thing, there was some tweets going out today about, like, Passan said they had offered like Glaber and four, whatever. The exact same tweet went out about the Padres and I think one other team, saying that Passan had said it on some station in New York. So I think that's all
yeah, that's gotta all be phooey. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
I shared one of those tweets in the Otto News Slack, and like 3 minutes later, people were like, "Wait a second."
I just saw this for the Orioles. Like, yeah,
that's right.
I mean, So I actually ended up going with the Padres because I had a hard time with this. Like, if I'm just choosing where I want him to go for fantasy purposes, then it's definitely the Yankees. If it's where I want him to go because I'm a baseball fan, it's the Red Sox. So I just kind of took it as like, what's the most realistic and what would be fun? And I think it is actually the Padres. So it's interesting that you brought them up. First of all, I think they're realistic. From a starting point, it's hard to get better than if this is a starting point. And I have a hard time with this because it's so, like I said 1,000 times, it's so hard to predict this. But if, you know, they called and said, hey, we're offering Hassel, Abrams, and more. I mean, that's a heck of a starting point for this guy. I mean, that's top 10 prospects in baseball, even though Abrams, I think, has graduated from prospect status. And then they've got other names that would fit the bill of what they're looking for, like Estuary Ruiz or Mackenzie Gore, because they want MLB talent. I could see even Trent Grisham being a part of that deal if Washington thinks there's something they could do with him. But they've got a lot of pieces to move in San Diego. And I was reading a quote because originally I was going to pick the Giants for this. So I looked up, you know, what does it look like with the Giants? So I'm going to read this quote from Buster Olney. He said, my instinct is that I just don't see Farhan being the guy who is going to pay twice for an elite player like Juan Soto, paying the package of prospects now and then having the Scott Boras bill of $500 million plus in his next contract, which makes sense, right? That's not Farhan Zaidi's MO. I don't see him doing that because I don't get a sense from talking to people in the organization that there's a high level of desperation. Like, this is our window. We have to win now. I do feel that from the Padres. That's what Buster Olney said. And so we're talking about a GM in San Diego. The name is escaping me.
Preller, AJ Preller.
Yes, AJ Preller. But yeah, GM and AJ Preller that's always looking to make a deal. And now he's feeling pressure. And San Diego really needs the lineup boost. And imagine how fun that would be to have Manny Machado, Juan Soto, and Fernando Tatis Jr. all in the same lineup. And if you're the Nationals, like, that's an absolute haul. Like, that maybe you could sell to your fan base if you're getting two of the top 10 prospects in baseball, as well as other top guys and former top guys like Mackenzie Gore, like Ruiz, and like Trent Grisham. Not that he was a top prospect, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I love the idea of Grisham in a trade there because they're going to have to figure out what they're doing with Tatis. And if he's going to move to center field, then Grisham doesn't have a ton of value to them. But I think he is still, like, there's a lot of good still in Grisham. And so I'd be curious to see how would teams value him? And would he be, like, he's not going to carry a Soto deal, right? No one is like, oh, we got Trent Grisham as the key piece in a Soto deal. Like, that's great. But as like the third or fourth piece, I think is a really interesting buy low as long as you're actually buying low. So I like that idea. The team that I kind of want to see him go to, and I, you know, focusing on it from a fantasy perspective, I'll start by saying this. From a fantasy perspective, I really don't care. Like, if Juan Soto's on my team, he could go anywhere. He's still going to hit. And so I'm just, yes, it'd be great to see him hit in Yankee Stadium, but like, I don't care that much. I picked the Dodgers, and the reason I picked the Dodgers has little to do with Soto and a lot to do with the guys who I think could maybe go the other way. And the Dodgers have a bunch of guys like Michael Busch, Andy Pages, Bobby Miller, Ryan Pepiot, who are getting, you know, like Pepiot's gotten a couple of appearances, but not really consistent run. Miller, we haven't seen yet. Pages, we haven't seen yet. Busch, we haven't seen yet. But the guy I really want to see, and I think would really benefit, would be Miguel Vargas. He seems like these guys all seem blocked. Vargas is killing AAA. Third base is a disaster. The Nats have no answer at third base going forward. And so, you know, I think if you ship him off to DC, like, he's their starting third baseman the day after the trade, if they want him to be. You know, maybe they don't. But like, they brought Ruiz up last year after a very similar deal. And so I think he could get unlocked right away. And then I think, like I said, they could get Vargas and Pages, Busch, Miller, and Pepiot, something like that, right? Which would be a haul of talent, all of whom are at AA or above, all of whom could be helping out the Nationals this year, if not next. Like, it makes a ton of sense. It unlocks a bunch of guys. And so I really like it from that perspective. But I think at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to for me with the Soto trade from a fantasy perspective. I'm less worried about where he goes and more interested in who suddenly gets thrust into a meaningful role because they got traded. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously, like, as a baseball fan, I would love for him to end up in Cleveland. Cleveland 100% has the package to get it done. I even tweeted a sort of a thread the other day saying that if I were running the Guardians, I would actually very strongly consider, like, I would put together the package I think I'm willing to give up for 2.5 years of Soto. And I would put that trade out there. And if it happens, I would say he wants to test free agency. We are not planning to extend him. We did not trade for him to extend him. We traded for him to have him here for the next 2.5 years, to hit him with a qualifying offer and let him do his thing. And we're fine with that. And I would do that if I'm the Guardians. Now, it's not their MO, so it's unlikely they would do it. I also think that you're going to run into an issue if you're a team like that, where if you're willing to give up 4 prospects, some other team like the Dodgers, like the Padres, like the Yankees will throw in a 5th prospect because they will be able to, they'll take advantage of an exclusive negotiating window on top of the 2.5 years of Soto. So from that perspective, I don't think Cleveland's realistic, but like everybody should be in on this guy. And I just, from a fantasy perspective, I just don't care. Go wherever, he'll hit. Anything else on Soto?
No, I definitely like the Dodgers fit. I think another player that could go back to the Nationals in that is Gavin Lux. And I don't think it changes much. And Gavin Lux isn't much of a fantasy player. He's a much better actual baseball player. He's been pretty much an everyday player already this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if Lux is a part of that. Obviously, the Dodgers could put together a package. And you brought up Miguel Vargas. He should already be up. That's kind of the problem I'm having. Like,
oh, for sure. For
why,
sure.
Why are you trotting out Max Muncy still? It's almost August and he's batting like 150. Vargas has been incredible. There's a great piece in The Athletic written by Fabian Ardaya. I don't want to say his name incorrectly, but a writer for The Athletic, got me super pumped up for Miguel Vargas. And he is like, it could be any moment that dude is called up. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens within the next week. If it doesn't happen within the next month, then I don't know what the Dodgers are doing, because Max Muncy's not the answer.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. They should be giving Vargas a shot. And I don't know. Hopefully he gets moved, because I want him to get a shot somewhere. So let's do a quick, call it a lightning round, of other guys that I think would be good to get moved. Start with some of the comments we got on Twitter. One of them from at S.A. Kyle, S-A-K-I-E-H-L, who suggested that Luis Castillo could go to San Francisco. Now, from a park perspective and a team perspective, that's a huge upgrade for him. Interestingly, San Francisco's defense, as we talked about, is not very well rated. It's also unclear if San Francisco are buyers. I do love the idea that, like, Castillo has always seemed like a guy whose talent outpaces his production. And I love the idea of San Francisco's coaches getting a hold of him, because it seems like if there's some tweak that could be made, they would figure it out. So I thought that was an interesting one. Matt Heckman, who we've had on the show before, you can find him on Twitter at Heckman_Matt115. He had a couple of names he threw out there. One of them was, he suggested Joey Gallo to Miami. Miami, or like literally anywhere else. Get Gallo out of New York from a fantasy perspective. I don't know how much you want to see that, but get him out of New York and let him try to hit again, because I don't get what's happening with him, and he's way too talented for this. And I think there are some guys, I mean, maybe Sonny Gray is the best recent example. Like, some guys just don't seem to handle New York well. And so maybe he just needs to go somewhere else, but I'd at least like to find out.
I would. I think we should combine those last two and see if we can get Luis Castillo to the Yankees, and as part of a prospect package, because the Reds are looking long term, take Joey Gallo as well. Say, like, hey, we've got a very similar offer from, you know, the Dodgers and the Mariners. If you want this deal to get done, we need Joey Gallo. And not because I don't think park matters that much for Gallo, because he hits absolute tanks, but more, he would hit more tanks in Cincinnati. And it's a perfect, kind of like what they did with Tommy Pham, where it was like, let's sign this guy for a year. Let's bring this guy in, and if he performs well, we can get a prospect for him. I think that's a good way to view Gallo, because there's no question he would hit in There's no question that he would hit for a lot of power in Cincinnati. He would not hit a lot in Cincinnati.
Fair enough. The other guy that Matt mentioned also came up from at Around Pod, the Around the Diamond podcast. And I like the way they said this. They said to get Tyler Molly out of Great American Small Park. I hadn't heard the Great American Small Park, but it is a good nickname for that place. And yeah, I mean, Molly's home road splits are awful, just awful. He needs out of that park so badly. And he's the kind of guy that, like, there was a suggestion. I think Matt suggested Baltimore. It's like, go get him out of that park, get him in a place that now is at least a little bit more pleasant for pitchers, and have an ace lined up for next year, potentially. I like that idea.
I mean, Tyler Molly is the polar opposite of Luis Castillo. I said the ballpark wasn't a problem for Castillo because he puts the ball in the he induces so many ground balls. Molly's the opposite. He has had a 36% fly ball rate this year. And that's still with a 20% line drive rate. I mean, over half of the balls that are put in play, way more than half of the balls put in play, are put in the air for Tyler Molly. And that is obviously killing him at Great American Ballpark. So yeah, get him anywhere. Another guy who I don't want to keep coming back to the Red Sox, they need pitching in the worst way. I wouldn't mind seeing them throw a few players at Cincinnati to get Tyler Molly.
Yeah, I would take him in Cleveland as well. I mean, I think that he'd be a great fit in a lot of places. And I wonder if he's sort of, you know, is he the budget option out on the trade market right now because his number, like, people are going to question him, right? He's not going to have he isn't Montas and he isn't Castillo. He isn't the next guy we should maybe talk about, Pablo Lopez, right? Like, Lopez is supposedly on the market. And Daniel Port, who is our colleague at Pitcher List, had suggested Pablo Lopez to Cleveland. It's unclear to me if that's his fantasy perspective or just him being a Guardians fan and wanting Pablo Lopez. But I do think, you know, I'm a little biased, I'll admit to that. But like, any pitcher that goes to Cleveland, I'm feeling good about, because they've done such a good job of helping pitchers develop. And, you know, the worry with Lopez, though, is the health, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look at his career innings total. I called him not to toot my own horn here, I called him a sell high, like, at the end of, I don't know, April. And look, if you held on to him, it's not like he was bad. He just obviously wasn't as good as he was. I think in a lot of leagues, people could have got hauls for Pablo Lopez. I do worry about the health. I think of all those pitchers in Miami, he is the most likely to move because of his age and health situation. This is a prime sell high opportunity for them as well. Any place would be a good fit, but sure, why not Cleveland, where, you know, they've had so much success in the past?
Yeah. Speaking of Miami, the rumors are that they will listen on anyone except Sandy, which means that your boy Jazz is theoretically on the block.
That's just,
where would you want to see him go?
So weird. Like,
I agree. Why? But it seems like organizationally they aren't fans of him. Like, it just seems like he's rubbed people the wrong way. There was that weird team meeting earlier this year that apparently he was at the center of. So, like, it seems weird to me. It seems wrong to me. I'll be honest. If I'm thinking about where Jazz should go, other than my reply to Daniel Port, by the way, and the Pablo Lopez thing, was like, if they could go get Pablo Lopez and Jazz Chisholm and bring them to Cleveland, like, I'd be super excited about that. But the biggest thing for me on Jazz is, if they trade him, he needs to go to an organization that will let him be himself and let him be the personality. Like, he'd be such a positive personality for the game if he were just completely unlocked. And so, like, my fear with him is that he ends up in, like, Chicago and Tony La Russa.
Oh, Jesus. No, that's...
Or he ends up in New York where they're like, you know, you have to dress like a Yankee and act like a Yankee and blah, blah, blah. Like, those are, like, just none of those places. I think Toronto could be an awesome landing spot for him, because I think, like, it'd just be a super fun team. And, you know, do they have room for him? I don't know. That team is, they seem to have good players everywhere, but I would take him if I were them. I'm trying to think of what other teams he could go to and just be who he is. The Padres?
Am I wrong in thinking that Gabe Kapler's that kind of guy?
I don't know. San Francisco, like, I can't think of any, like, big personalities in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of anyone there who, like, whereas, like, in San Diego, you know, Machado has had a reputation at times for being difficult to deal with, but seems to be doing fine there, seems well liked there. They haven't had issues with him. Tatis is obviously a big personality, and, like, man, if Tatis could go back to shortstop and Jazz could be their second baseman, like, that would be a there'd be some super fun turn double plays in that infield. So
Alex Cora is like, known to be a player's coach. I don't know why the Red Sox would have too much interest there, but.
No, and actually you think about if we're as long as, like I mentioned, Cleveland, Francona had a history in Boston of dealing with big personalities and making them mesh well. And a lot like, you know, you think about those like Big Poppy and Manny and like those teams, Johnny Damon, like he did a good job of letting those guys be themselves. And so, you know, Tito could work. I don't know. Be interesting. If he goes, I'm not again. Yeah. And the last thing I'll mention, and then we can see if you've got anything else, you can let me know. Actually, two more I want to mention. One is the Guardians have talked about being willing to trade controllable pitching, Plesac, Savali, maybe even Bieber. I would love to see them unblock guys like Hunter Gaddis or Peyton Battenfield and pave the way for Daniel Espino, Gavin Williams. Like they're the future is coming for that Cleveland rotation. I'd love to see them both from a personal and a fantasy perspective. I'd love to see them sort of move their way towards that. And the other one is, we talked about this before, and I'm curious to get your take on it. Boston could use a first baseman. They clearly are not ready to call up Tristan Casas. Nathaniel Lowe is on Texas. Texas is going nowhere. Lowe's home road splits are crazy. He has been very, very good outside of Texas. And I think he could fit really well in Fenway.
Yeah, there's no question that he could. I'm looking up his contract right now. Yeah, so I mean he hasn't hit arbitration yet, so he'd be locked up for a while. I like in terms of fit in fantasy, like yeah, of course I see it. I see the home road splits. You know, it's Fenway Park. We're talking about a power hitting lefty. Like yeah, it sort of fits the bill. Although Fenway can be a little hard on left handed power, it wasn't the case for a certain number 34, but in the past it has been. I just like Casas. It hasn't been called up, not really because of production, but because of his ankle sprain. And I think the Red Sox season is heading in a direction where it's like, we're just going to continue to trot out these two disasters in Franchy Cordero and Bobby Dalbec until the Sox do feel like it's time to call up Casas. And then we're going to see what we have. If over the next, you know, if they somehow.
Dalbec hit a home run, just so you know.
Yeah.
Dalbec.
Of course he did. Of course he did. Yeah. Which means he didn't strike out, which he does like, what, 40% of the time? I've lost complete faith in all Red Sox first basemen outside of Tristan Casas. So, yeah.
I mean, I think the thing I'll say about Casas and Lowe is JD Martinez is gone too. And so they need a first baseman and they have room at DH. So those two guys could coexist. And if you really run into an issue, like if Lowe is as good as I think he could be in Boston, and Casas is as good as you and lots of prospect prognosticators think he is, then you trade one of them if you need to, or you use one of them at DH and it's fine. So I think that's a problem that can solve itself, but I hear you. So any other trades, any other lightning rounds, quick mentions you want to talk about? Or
I'd like to see Trey Mancini land someplace awesome and let see him make a run. I know, you know, we've talked about Baltimore being this like rocket ship, but I'm pretty certain they're not going anywhere. And like you said, I think they're going to have a pretty tough second half. So they have pieces to move that, like, as happy as I'd be for Trey Mancini to go to a place like the Mets, it'd also be huge for Baltimore to start adding to that future core. And I think moving Mancini is a good way to do that. I also wouldn't be surprised if they start moving those bullpen pieces with him. I know there was a rumor that the Mets were going to get Mancini and then it got tied up because they also wanted Dylan Tate. But like, as awesome as he's been, why not move Jorge Lopez as well? Like, you're not actually competing right now. So, like, cash in these chips that are not long-term answers for you and like, let's go.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think it'd be great to see Mancini get into the playoffs and get the... He's just been so lost in Baltimore because Baltimore has been Baltimore. And it would just be great to see him on a national stage and nationally broadcast games, like... It's such a good story and he seems like such a good dude. And I just, it'd be great to see that come together for him. So
also we'll real quick, if they did move Jorge Lopez, like Felix Bautista's fantasy value is going to go through the roof. Cause that guy is filthy and he's going to be getting save opportunities.
Well, and I would think he's the one they would keep, right? Because he's going to be there a while. So I would think he wouldn't be one of the guys they would trade. Although again, if I'm not competing, I'm trading everyone in my bullpen. I don't care how long, like I'm just, they can go. That's just me though. So I think we've covered enough and we should probably stop there.
We'll have more to talk about next week.
Yes, after the trades are actually done, we can talk about the fantasy impact of the trades that actually happened instead of these made-up ones that don't happen. But thank you all for listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us ratings and reviews. Follow the show at Keep or Cut on Twitter. That's Cut with a K. You can find Pete on Twitter at Pete B Baseball. You can find me at Chad Young. Love to hear from you. If you got questions, let us know. You got teams you want us to look at, let us know. Happy to help out any way we can. Have a good week, and we'll be back with you next week.